I believe that we should continue to expand oil production in America, even as we increase safety and environmental standards.
The president calls for drilling in the National Petroleum Reserve, Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 16th of May. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a man from Nome is in critical condition after a brown bear attack.
The bear actually charged Perkins then, and Perkins was still on a snow machine handling his gear, and he was not able to get out of the way.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A.
Three soldiers from the 1st Striker Brigade combat team based at Fort Wainwright were killed today by an improvised explosive device in the city of Spingarba, Afghanistan, while conducting a mounted patrol. A fourth soldier assigned to the unit the Striker Brigade is replacing was also killed. Two other soldiers from the brigade were wounded in the same incident. Major Bill Coppernall is a U.S. Army spokesman. He said the men from the brigade were only there a short while.
The brigade has been deployed over the last month. I'm not sure how long these particular soldiers, how long they've been in country, but yes, they've been over there for a short period of time.
Coppernall says there is little more information on the nature of the incident.
Our units, they move along the route, along the roads. They conduct mounted patrols, and in this case, improvised explosive device detonated, killing and wounding some of these our Striker Brigade combat team. You know, our thoughts and prayers go out to the families of these soldiers, their loved ones, who no doubt are going through a tough time right now.
The 4,000-soldier brigade began deploying to Afghanistan in mid-April for a one-year tour in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. The brigade's last deployment was to Iraq during 2008 and 2009, during which the unit experienced 5 combat deaths and 2 non-combat deaths. The names of the soldiers are being withheld pending notification of the families. An Italian climber was killed in a fall today on Denali. Luciano Colombo died in a 1,000-foot fall at about 10 a.m. this morning as he was on his way back down the mountain. He fell from a pass at about 18,000 feet. Mountaineers at a camp 1,000 feet below watched the fall, and when mountaineering rangers responded, they discovered Colombo had died from trauma. Maureen McLaughlin is a public information officer with the National Park Service. She says the area where Colombo fell is very steep, about a 45-degree slope.
At this point in the season, it's very hard and windblown, very difficult to arrest a fall. From what I understand, it's pretty treacherous walking because they're on a diagonal as they're moving along it. From what it sounds like, this individual had fallen just at the very top of that traverse.
Colombo was 67 years old. This is the second death on Denali this year. 38-year-old Beat Niederer of Switzerland died from unknown causes near 18,000 feet last week. McLaughlin says it's sobering to have 2 fatal accidents in the first few weeks of the Denali climbing season. A Nome man is in critical condition following a brown bear attack yesterday east of Nome. KNOM's Ben Matheson has the story.
54-year-old Wes Perkins underwent surgery today after being mauled by a bear on Sunday near Skookum Pass. He was placed in a medically induced coma today at Harborview Medical Center in Seattle. He suffered extensive injuries to his head and lower jaw. He was taken to the Nome Hospital on helicopter following the attack, then flown to Anchorage and Seattle. His family is with him in Seattle. Alaska State Troopers are conducting an investigation of the incident, which took place around 3 o'clock yesterday. Troopers say Perkins was with 2 other men on snow machines when they spotted a large boar. Trooper spokesperson Megan Peters says Perkins was riding ahead of the 2 other men in the party when he passed the bear, which had gone down by a creek and laid down in the deep snow.
He drove about another 70 feet further, turned his snow machine around. The bear actually charged Perkins then, and Perkins was still on a snow machine handling his gear, and he was not able to get out of the way.
The men in the hunting party were able to shoot the bear, which then wandered away and died. The men contacted emergency responders via handheld radio. A helicopter retrieved Perkins and transported him to the hospital. The brown bear died and was salvaged. Perkins is Telalaska's Nome Area Supervisor. He serves as president of the Nome Ham Radio Club and is a member of the Nome Volunteer Fire Department. Reporting in Nome, I'm Ben Matheson.
President Obama is singling out the oil in Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve as part of a plan to boost domestic production. He's also starting a new team to coordinate Alaska drilling permits. APRN's Libby Casey reports.
In his weekly address Saturday, the president said while there are no quick fixes to the high price of gas at the pump, he wants to take steps that will help in the long run.
Last year, America's oil production reached its highest level since 2003, but I believe that we should continue to expand oil production in America, even as we increase safety and environmental standards. To do this, I'm directing the Department of Interior to conduct annual lease sales in Alaska's National Petroleum Reserve, while respecting sensitive areas.
The president's plan does not require congressional approval, and the lease sales are slated to take place later this year. While NPRA might be opened up, the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge is still not under consideration by the Obama administration. But the references to Alaska brought praise from the state's congressional delegation and governor. Senator Mark Begich pointed out that no drilling is being done in NPRA right now. One of the holdups is that the Army Corps of Engineers denied a permit to ConocoPhillips to bring the oil by pipe over the Colville River. Begich says that's a problem.
By them indicating they want to have more leasing there tells me that I think we'll be able to resolve this issue and move forward and have some exploration and development there.
Begich is applauding the president's plan to put into place a team focused on Alaska drilling permits.
We're very pleased with that. It lifts it. That idea comes right out of a piece of legislation we put down about 2 weeks ago, which said that there's just such a discoordinated effort within the Arctic from all these different federal agencies. They have to get more coordinated.
Begich says the proof is in the pudding, and he'll look for the administration to act, not just talk. The two other members of Alaska's delegation, Senator Lisa Murkowski and Congressman Don Young, also say they want to see what muscle the administration puts behind this weekend's announcement. Begich, as the group's only Democrat, has been pushing from within his caucus to get support for more Alaskan development. He's had a few conversations with President Obama in recent weeks in which he's pressed the president for action. The senator says President Obama has rated the degree to which he sees eye to eye with Begich on oil and gas at 60% to 70%. While Alaska's political leaders are happy, environmentalists are reacting with caution. Leah Donahue is the Western Arctic and Oceans Program Director for the Alaska Wilderness League.
We don't want to move straight forward ahead with drilling in the Arctic, either on land or offshore, without some serious take on whether or not they can actually clean up an oil spill in the Arctic, and after much more research has been done to ensure the protection of the ecosystem and the people that live off the North Slope.
Donahue says NPRA is full of critical habitat for animals and migratory birds, and her organization is watching to see where leases will be offered. President Obama's oil and gas plans laid out over the weekend aren't just about development. He repeated calls by many congressional Democrats to get rid of taxpayer subsidies for oil companies, which are making near-record profits. Obama said that isn't fair.
In the last few months, the biggest oil companies made about $4 billion in profits each week. And yet they get $4 billion in taxpayer subsidies each year. $4 billion at a time when Americans can barely fill up their tanks. $4 billion at a time when we're trying to reduce our deficit.
The president said the nation should instead be investing in clean, renewable energy. He also said the high price of gas at the pump could be helped by the task force he recently launched, led by the attorney general, to investigate manipulation of oil prices by speculators. Oil issues are on the agenda in Congress this week, too. On Tuesday, the Interior Secretary testifies before the Senate Energy Committee about offshore development, and the whole Senate is expected to vote on whether to get rid of those oil company tax breaks the president doesn't like. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a totem pole raising in Sitka to commemorate a big anniversary for the National Park Service.
I think it's the biggest crowd I've ever seen at a pole raising, at one of mine anyways. It was really cool.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Northern Air Cargo. For over 54 years, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. And by Penn Air, providing scheduled service to 36 communities throughout Southwest Alaska. Reservations online at pennair.com.
The legislature ended its special session Saturday night by passing a $3.1 billion capital projects budget and failing to find a structure that would keep open the state's coastal management program. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
The House will adjourn the first special session of the 27th Alaska State Legislature. Sidey-die.
As Speaker Mike Chenault brought down the gavel, the complex and contentious special session had, over 27 days, worked its agenda down to the two final issues. And they were the same issues that had been at the heart of the fight between the House and Senate since early in the regular session. The final blow came with the early adjournment of the House Saturday night without reconsideration of the capital budget and with the refusal to extend the coastal management program. Minority Leader Beth Krutula pleaded for one more vote. She told members that she had a lot of problems with the conference committee bill, but she reminded them that if it failed, the program will disappear by June 30th.
We're going to lose the state's ability to take any action on federal permits, on federal lands or federal waters. It's an important state's right. We use it as much to negotiate against the federal government as we ever do against industry. And really, truly, it will be industry and small communities and small committees that are going to lose if this bill goes away.
The House originally voted on the capital projects budget Friday night, but it held it for a final Saturday vote that wasn't needed. It adjourned, although the Senate leaders had already suggested a conference committee to discuss their differences. The House was spending more than $300 million more than the Senate, and there were some individual expenditures that could have made it more acceptable. Senate President Gary Stevens pointed to strained relations between the two bodies, but the Senate's only choice at that time was to leave without any budget or to take what the House had sent them.
It was not an easy thing to do, but I think in the end it was the right thing to do. We have many wins in this budget, many things we'll be proud of, but of course in the end it's not exactly perfect. It never is. It seems less perfect this year than in the past, but it's something we have to work on for the future.
The next step in the budget will come from the governor, who early in the session set an arbitrary spending limit of $2.8 billion. If his goal still stands, he'll have to find the projects to eliminate. There are currently no plans for interim sessions. The next regular session of the legislature will begin January 17th of next year. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
The $200 million bridge across the Tananaw River at Salcha may yet be built. The bridge to access military training grounds appeared to be dead until Fairbanks area representatives late last week convinced fellow lawmakers to include it in the $3.2 billion capital budget approved over the weekend. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
The Alaska Railroad's bridge project appeared all but dead until last week when, in the waning days of the special session, members of the State House Interior Delegation put on a full-court press that was complemented by strong public testimony in last week's House Finance Committee Capital Projects hearing and the backing of Governor Sean Parnell. In the end, House members approved a $3.2 billion capital projects package that included $44 million that the railroad says is needed to get the bridge project rolling. Fairbanks Representative Steve Thompson says the governor's support helped push the bridge over the top late Thursday.
Going after the governor to get him to say, yeah, this is a good project for Alaska, we need to get it done, helped a lot.
Thompson says he and the other members of the Interior Delegation had to stage the late-in-the-game rally because, despite assurances early in the year, the bridge was not included on a list of projects that the governor sent to the Senate during the regular session.
We were kind of given the indication, yeah, it's going to show up in the capital budget when the governor sends it over to the Senate. didn't show up there, which surprised everybody.
Thompson says the project also was not on the Senate's capital project list issued last week. The governor's support suggests the bridge funding will remain in whatever final capital budget is signed by Parnell. But the bridge project still has another hurdle to clear. Strong concerns that have been expressed by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency over the location and design of the bridge and its effect on the Tanana River ecosystem in that area. Railroad spokeswoman Stephanie Wheeler said Friday that the EPA could still stop the project if the agency raises those objections again if and when the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issues permits to allow the project to move forward. Wheeler says the bridge project had been on hold until the legislature decided on the railroad's request for an additional $44 million. She says the railroad will now resume working with the Corps to obtain those permits. Railroad officials have said the EPA's concerns have already been addressed in studies conducted last year as part of the environmental impact statement that the railroad filed for the Northern Rail Extension, the larger project that includes the bridge. The rail extension, estimated to cost some $800 million, would include construction of about 80 miles of new track from the terminus at Eielson Air Force Base to military training ranges near Fort Greely on the west side of the Tanana River near Delta Junction. The extension would enable the Army to transport equipment and personnel to the training ranges quicker and cheaper than running convoys on the Richardson Highway. Pat Gamble, a retired four-star Air Force general who formerly headed the Alaskan Command, said in an interview in March that he was arguing for construction of the rail extension since he retired from the military and became CEO of the Alaska Railroad Corporation in 2002.
The Iraq War was winding down. We were looking at bringing a bunch of forces home. We were looking at things like reduction of forces in Korea. And the idea was we were going to get forces into Fort Wainwright.
The military benefits of the project have been well publicized, but Gamble says the rail extension was first proposed as a boost to business to haul equipment and other freight and passengers between Fairbanks, Delta, and Fort Greeley, and as the first leg of an eventual link to the Canadian rail system.
We have agriculture in Delta. You'd have a train all the way down there for bulk in both directions. You have a mine close by. They were very interested in whether or not we were going to actually do this because, you know, shipping is expensive by truck.
Gamble says the plan included building track down the Alaska Highway into the Yukon. He says the right-of-way in which the tracks would be built also would help save money for laying utilities and even possibly a natural gas pipeline.
It was going to be some 600 feet wide, and you could put the gas line in there, and you could put fiber optic, and you could put the railroad.
In Fairbanks, I'm Tim Ellis.
Matanuska Susitna Borough Assembly members have started debating this year's $379 million borough budget. The bulk of the budget will pay for school costs to keep pace with the fast-growing population of the Mat-Su. The borough's fiscal year 2012 spending plan includes $259.5 million for school district operations, $43 million for borough operations, and $19 million for capital projects. Acting borough manager Elizabeth Gray authored the proposed budget, although the borough's new manager, John Moosey, is now on the job and will be the one to implement the version that the assembly approves.
I think we're on the right track. I know the assembly really wants to lower the millage rate, and they're working hard to do it. As a manager coming in, I want to be cautious that we don't cut too much of our operations where it's going to cause us to increase the levy the following year.
Borough Mayor Larry DeVilbiss has asked for more than $2 million in reductions. Moosey says he's spoken with assembly members to come up with about $1.8 million in cuts as an alternative. Moosey says there's always debate about what services are essential and what services are the most highly valued by the community.
I just want to make sure, from my perspective, that when we look at any increases or decreases or changes in the budget, that we look at it through a view of a long term. You know, how is this going to affect us for not only 2011, 2012, but moving forward? That's why I want to stress is having establishing priorities and looking at our operations long term.
The Borough Assembly is expected to make amendments to the budget before a final approval. Further Assembly budget discussions are scheduled for this evening and for May 23rd and 25th. The Borough was a winner in this year's state budget. The state capital budget, which the State House passed Friday night and was accepted by the Senate, includes $37.5 million in funding for the Port McKenzie Rail Link and reinstates the Department of Corrections' original request for $3.5 million for initiating operations at Goose Creek Correctional Facility in 2012.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Full Circle. Full Circle grows, picks, and delivers fresh, certified organic produce year-round. More information about their 400-acre farm and their organic partners at fullcircle.com. Quitting tobacco is the best thing you can do for your health. Join a free program that will help you create an easy-to-follow plan to quit. It will show you how to get ready, take action, and then live the rest of your life as a non-smoker. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line provides 8 weeks of patches, gum, or lozenges, and quit coaches that are trained to address Alaskans, including expectant mothers. There's more information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line. It's free, it's confidential, and it works.
Biologists will begin capturing sea otters in southeast Alaska this week in an attempt to learn more about the population. The scientists will capture and release 30 otters at two different sites near Ketchikan and Juneau. Jim Bodkin is a researcher with the United States Geological Survey based in Washington State. He says the team will use lots of different techniques to learn as much as possible about the otters.
From those sea otters, we'll take measurements and samples. It'll tell us something about the health of the individuals. It'll also tell us something about their exposure to diseases and contaminants and thermal stresses and other kinds of physiological stresses.
The project is part of an effort that began in 2008 to understand why many sea otter populations are struggling from the Gulf of Alaska to Southern California. In southeast Alaska, the otter population expanded rapidly for several decades at the end of the last century, but in the last 10 years, those population growth rates have been cut at least in half. Bodkin says one test they'll do on the otters is an advanced technique taken from human medicine. The researchers will measure a panel of genes in the animals to see what types of things they've been exposed to recently.
When you fill your car with gasoline, you breathe some of those vapors, your body is capable of metabolizing those hydrocarbons that you're inhaling. But in the process of doing so, there's a process where the cell has to tell the body to produce these compounds that are able to metabolize, and that leaves a record in the genes of the organisms that we can measure.
Bodkin says otters tested in previous years from California showed a record in their genes of large wildfires that had happened nearby the year before. Hundreds of Sitkins gathered along the beach at Sitka National Historical Park on Sunday to help raise a totem pole commemorating the park's 100th anniversary. The pole, designed by Sitka carver Tommy Joseph, now stands looking out at the water next to the park's visitor center. KCAW's Ed Ronco attended Sunday's festivities and sent back this audio postcard. It begins with Kenny Grant explaining the name of the pole.
So the pole needs a name, and we came to a conclusion to a name, and I think you'll appreciate it. Wuch jin dus shut. Wuch means we're holding. Wuch is together. Hands, jin dus shut. We're holding hands. And what you see here is a history of the Park Service and the Tlingit of Sitka, and all the Haidas, all the people in Southeast Alaska. They've been holding hands for 100 years, and now we commemorate it in this totem pole. So I'm going to ask each one of you, all of you here, to repeat after me. It's real simple, and the first part is wooch, and then, okay, everybody say wooch. Jin. Dus. Shut. Kutia. Okay, we'll do it 3 times. Wooch jin dus shut kutia. Wooch jin dus shut kutia. Wooch jin dus shut kutia. Okay, you just breathe the name into the pole.
Do it. All right, ready? Ready? You guys ready? Here we go. Go.
My name's Tommy Joseph. They all did great. It was we couldn't have done it without them. It was awesome to have. I think it's the biggest crowd I've ever seen at a pole race, and at one of mine, anyways. It was really cool. This art form has been evolving since the beginning, and this is another part of that. It's always been evolving. It's not a dead, stagnant art form. And it's a part of our culture that's alive and going forward.
Sure, my name is Sue Masica. I'm the Regional Director of the National Park Service here in the state of Alaska.
One of the beauties and one of the most important jobs the Park Service has is to both revere the past and share that with the future. And I think this pole is a wonderful blending of that part of the Park Service's work, but then also the great relationship and the importance of the tribal relations and the Park Service's community with the tribe and the community here in Sitka. So it's just a wonderful celebration of that history and this community.
Sounds from Sunday's totem pole raising at the Sitka National Historical Park. The park is built around the site of a Kiksati fort site. A separate ceremony on Sunday included the installation of a plaque commemorating the Kiksati survival march across Baranof Island after the fort was lost to the Russians in 1804. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at aprn.org or follow us on Twitter at aprn. We had reports tonight from Ben Matheson in Nome, Tim Ellis in Delta, and Ed Ronco in Sitka. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C., and Dave Donaldson from Juneau. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit, our audio engineer, Dave Waldron, and I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking a variety of tire chains from passenger vehicles to heavy equipment, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance. How do you get men to wear their life jacket when the fact is that 90% of boating-related fatalities in Alaska are men? Well, truthfully, most men won't listen to messages like this, but they might listen to you. Have them fill out a Pledge to Live card and make a promise to wear their life jacket every time they get in a boat. Every time. Get a Pledge to Live card at pledgetolive.org. Make them promise so they make it back alive. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.